You can have any brew you want, as long as it's a Corona. That's Vinci, so enjoy it.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I'm Ross Bacon. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How's everyone doing?
And as you should know by now, we're two dudes drink and talk about movies. Now, this week, for movies that are basically the same, we are doing two all-timers. And these are both equally amazing. And one has spawned more than it ever should have. And it's not the one it should have been. So we are doing...
This is also a long-running joke on the podcast that these movies are basically the same and somehow was not the inspiration for this theme.
Yeah, right, exactly. But it is Point Break from 1991, and of course, 10 years later, The Fast and The Furious came around, and we will be doing those two tonight. But sadly, Point Break is not the movie that spawned the 45 movie franchise.
No, only a shitty remake.
Awful, awful remake. But before we get into how the ex-presidents and the Toretto family are basically the same, we have to talk about what we're drinking. So, Mike, what do you got?
All right. So, I thought Ross might have too fun with this episode. So, I had to bring back a little nemesis for him to give him a little...
Boy. Oh,
so
boy.
We're going with Ross Brewing.
Ross Brewing, I knew it.
Hackensack Heffenweisen.
I knew it. Bastards.
So German-style Heffenweisen ale with lemon and blood orange. It is 5.2% alcohol, and it's delicious. Ross always makes a good beer, and I'm not talking about the Ross on this podcast. You know, I'm not really ever attempted to make a beer, but I'm not sure.
I have not, but when the litigation goes through, it's going to be my brewery. I'm kidding. I've never been there. I probably will, and if I ever get myself up there, I'll start shit. But it'll be fine. But, yeah, and meanwhile, on the other hand, since we are talking about Fast and the Furious, I am drinking the only beer allowed in the house, which is Corona. So I'm drinking Corona Extra, and I'm drinking a 1 pint 8 fluid ounces can, or 24 fluid ounces can. I have another one in the fridge, just in case. But it is, of course, Corona. And I want to say, it says here, brewed and canned by Cerveceria Modelo, Mexico. And without looking it up, because who cares, La Cerveza Más Fina, I feel like it's owned by Modelo, right? Like, it's probably just an offshoot of Modelo, so it's like the Simpsons joke of Bud Light, Bud Dry, or Duff Light, yeah. Duff Dry, and all that. It's all one pipe with three spouts, you know? That's all it really is. But
I was debating getting a Corona. I couldn't do it. I hate Corona. I really do.
Yeah, I don't have a lime or anything, but... It tastes like a fairly cheap Mexican beer. You know, I would rather be drinking Modelo because that's a little better in my opinion. But I don't know. Maybe Corona out of a can, out of a tall boy can, is just it's not the same as out of the clear signature bottle that Dom and the crew drink out of. But first, I think we need to get into Keanu and Busey and Swayze and John C. McGinley and Lori Petty and the three other ex-presidents. And we need to talk about Point Break. We'll start with Point Break because that's where it all obviously spawned. And rewatching these movies, because I've been watching, like I said, I got both these on 4K recently. Rewatching these again, I've seen Point Break a million times. And then watching Fast and Furious, like, right after it, it's kind of insane how almost identical these movies are.
This was far and away the easiest to come up with our categories of comparison. So, let me lay them out for you. So, I'm thinking first category of comparison, our undercover cop. Who is the better undercover cop?
I mean, it's got to be Johnny Utah, right? Because he's actually undercover the
whole time. Let me lay out the... We're jumping the gun here, Ross.
All right, fine.
All right, let me go through the categories first.
Okay.
All right, undercover cop, our leader of the not so bad bad guys.
Okay.
I felt like it was. I skipped over cop right hand man because Busey is in the movie way more than whoever. Brian's like right hand man cop dude.
Ted Levine, the legendary Ted Levine. But I don't know. The behaviors of black FBI agent, because that's what we need to distinguish here. Brian O'Connor, aka Brian Spillner, is not an FBI agent. He's just a cop. He's a regular undercover cop. He wants to be a detective. They don't say that he is a detective. They say that the detective shield is what the prize is after bringing down this crew. So right off the bat, I think more qualified is Johnny Utah, because he is a full-on federal agent, as we do find out. But
is he more qualified? Because one of them uses their real name, and it's not the not FBI agent.
That's the other part. Johnny Utah does at least have the benefit of working in 1991, where the internet's not a thing yet. And he also has the benefit of going up against a crew that doesn't have a quote-unquote tech genius in it.
Yeah.
Now, Jesse in The Fast and the Furious, as we're told by Dom Toretto, can find anything about anyone on the internet. Except, but basically,
he could have got, if he was more straight edge, he probably would have gotten into somewhere like MIT.
Right. I guess he can find anything about anyone unless they're a cop. Because he definitely should have figured out, or at least learned, that the Brian O'Connor, it's definitely not Brian Spillner, it's Brian O'Connor is what he should have figured out. But unless the LAPD went that extra step, they created a Brian Spillner history somewhere. I don't know. They don't mention it. I doubt they did. But the characters, like with the superiors, the character of Agent Bilkins is an FBI agent. He is an FBI federal agent. He is the one, attitude-wise and job-wise, that's akin to John C. McGinley in Point Break. Now, Ted Levine, though, is Brian's direct boss, which means he is the position-wise, the direct.
But he doesn't really have a partner, because Pappas is the partner, not the boss.
Right, and that's the thing. There's two people in these movies that do not have a direct analog. One of which is Pappas, one of which is Gary Busey. There is no Busey character in Fast and the Furious. And then there's no Letty character in Fast and the Furious, because she's one of the gang members. She's not Lori Petty, which is Jordana Brewster. So she's like Roach or one of the other guys.
All right, so full categories. We're going our detective/cops. We're going our charismatic leader of the gangs. We're going with the underlings of the gangs, disregarding the leader, just the underlings comparing. We're going to go with their actual heists.
Okay.
So, like, robbing banks versus getting, like, DVD players and TVs off of trucks.
TV-DVD combos.
The counterculture comparison. So, like, Southern California surfing versus the racing counterculture. We're going to compare the love interests. We're going to compare the red herring rival gang that, like, might have done it but didn't do it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing with Fast and the Furious, because we're kind of given... We're not given two full fake out gangs, but we are given another. We are obviously Johnny Tran's crew is the same as War Child's crew.
Yeah.
But I would argue that Johnny Tran's crew, by virtue of we see what they have stolen shit, they've not necessarily stolen shit, But they are, as far as I could tell, they're reselling like legally purchased shit. Like they're not stealing the shit, because we do learn that they've legally purchased what's found in their garage. But the scale of their crimes is kind of unknown. But it does seem to be a little bit lesser than War Child's crew, because War Child's crew has an arsenal. They are dealing in crystal meth. They have the DEA involved with them. These dudes are bad. These are bad. So
let's start here. Let's start here, because this is like the one of the least consequential comparisons in terms of the overall movie. So we'll start with the Red Herring gangs. All right. So with Trans Gang, they definitely get more development than War Child.
Yeah, they do. We see that they actually have like families and shit too. And him and what is it? Is it Lee? I think it's the guy that's the head of Flaming Dragon in Tropic Thunder. Yeah. He's Johnny Tran's cousin, is who he is. But so like there's a connection there, whereas you know that these guys in LA are like minor players to Dom and his crew. Like Dom and his crew are obviously the big bad, the big crew that's making the heist and all that. But like the little bullshit crew is Johnny Tran's crew, which is weird.
No, it's kind of wild to call them the little bullshit crew, because Johnny Tran is like, we only see him race once and he kills Jesse in the race.
In a like $100,000 modified S2000, you know, he has put a lot of work into this car. And the thing is, his dad is like a power player as well. So this dude is easily some sort of mob connected kid.
And they do kill Jesse. And
they do, yeah, they flat out ice Jesse.
Whereas so it's not like they're no crime people, like, but so like they murder someone. But then you get the War Child's gang. They have Anthony Kiedis, you know, playing Anthony Kiedis as himself in 1991.
That would be a waste of time.
And then they have the DEA agent, the guy who's like, "You think I like this hair?"
The late great Tom Sizemore, yeah. Yep.
So I'm torn on this one, because like the actual parts of the movie, I think Johnny Tran plays a bigger part than War Child. But if we're going with which gang is more intimidating, it's War Child.
Easily, because it's Johnny Tran's crew to Vince's, to Dom's crew is very much like all right, they're kind of like slapping each other back and forth. And then when Johnny Tran gets really screwed over by Jesse, and then they get raided and he thinks Dom did it, he thinks Dom narked on him, that's when shit hits the fan. Meanwhile, War Child's gang is just like, then after Anthony Kiedis says, "That would be a waste of time," War Child's famous line is, "We're just going to fuck you up." So it's like, he doesn't even care who Johnny Utah is. He's just going to beat his ass, maybe kill him. We don't even know. So they have no problem just throwing down whenever. They just give a shit, you know? And then, of course, they break out that arsenal that they have, you know?
So my vote here is going to go to Johnny Tran, just because they actually play a major role in the movie with Jesse's death and stuff.
I'm going to go with War Child's crew for two reasons. One of which is because we get the iconic forever in gold line of "Back off, War Child, seriously." Then we also have the character of Freight Train. The character of Freight Train in Point Break is one of my favorite characters, because A, he does not get a name. He is the naked chick showering during the raid. And C, he kicks some serious ass. The only way that that chick gets taken out is by like a gun to the back of the head, basically. She gets knocked out after that. She is kicking Johnny Utah's ass. She's beating the shit out of dudes. And it's so funny, because I was like, you know, even the unsuspecting naked chick in the shower is one of the most dangerous people in the house. Yes. You know? So it's like, okay, I'm going to go with War Child's crew, because it seems like any one of them could be just ball of trouble on their own. You know, these people had just had serious rap sheets.
All right, yeah, that's fair. This was like the big one of the bigger 50-50s for me in this, just because I'm like, all right, one has like the intimidation factor and like the other has the actual importance of the plot, and I went with the plot one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes sense. And the thing is, like, I also like, because since this is Fast and Furious is a movie about street racing, and we're looking at all kinds of ridiculous vehicles in that movie, the vehicle that War Child's crew has, like that pickup Jeep or whatever it is, yeah. it's like the perfect 90s like LA beach Jeep, and like they're weaving in and out of traffic, and that thing looks awesome. Like, it just looks like a car that you can just beat around a beach town in and be all, and it'd just be fun. So like that tacks on an extra point or two with me as well. And I kind of like the fact that their neighbor, that War Child's neighbor, just cutting his grass during the raid, has like no clue that these dudes next to him are about to get raided by the FBI, or he doesn't even care, or he's more pissed off that now his lawnmower has been shot by a federal agent, so he now has to get a new one.
What? That is the scene with the raid where like Keanu's about to get his face pushed into the lawnmower. Like that's a tense scene. I do like
it's
that.
It's intense. It is. It really is. It's definitely intense. Yeah. But all right. So
half a point to each. Half a point to each. Next up, we're going to countercultures. So racing versus Southern California / surfing.
It's surfing. Yeah, surfing, definitely. I got to give it, this one, I got to give the vent to Dom and his crew. This one's got to go. It's got to be the LA street culture, because these dudes are like in deep with it. They are, and it's much more fleshed out, I guess I'll say.
So this one, I'm going with surfing counterculture. It might be because I also watched Lords of Dogtown this week, but that, okay, Southern California, like longboarding, surfing, I vibe with that counterculture more than the racing. It also might be because my brother's in like the drift racing culture, so I'm like, turn the fucking racing videos off, Dan.
Little known fact that Dan is Dom Toretto. It's never been mentioned before, but.
No, he's actually probably closer to DK because he does drift racing, not street racing.
Yeah, whatever you're gonna do. He's Han. I think he's more like Hans.
Han?
He's definitely Han.
But yeah, no. So like outside of racing, I don't think you get as much into the culture in like yeah, you get the street races at like early in the movie, and you get the race, what's the race event at the end called?
Oh, no. You mean Race Wars?
Race Wars. Race Wars.
The only thing you can never forget the name of?
But I'm like, you get the racing, but like you don't get the other part. Like, I feel like you get the activity, but you don't get so much of like how that activity affects regular lives or how like personalities revolve around it quite as much as you get that with like the surfing. And like you get real philosophical with the surfing and the skydiving in Point Break.
Well, you kind of get that too with Dom, because he gives the whole "I live my life a quarter mile at a time" speech after, you know, he gives the speech about, you know, beating up his the guy who killed his dad or whatever. Which last night after watching Fast and Furious, I started watching F9. And because I hadn't seen F9 or Fast X yet, I started watching F9. And the fact that they bring this unknown brother into it, played by John Cena, and they make a whole like mystery about that shit is just fucking amazing to me. But Dom is very much he's not as zen or philosophical as Bodhi is. Like, he doesn't seem to live his every minute of Bodhi's life seems to be dictated by living this higher truth as a surfer or a skydiver and just being more in touch with the universe. Whereas Dom, on the other hand, it's more like his driving, and he even says it. He says, when I'm during that 10 seconds, a quarter mile, I'm free. That's what he says. And it's like, okay.
So it's like escapism versus transcendentalism.
Basically, yeah, it's living, it's getting away from life basically for 10 seconds versus dictate like living your entire life based off of being anti-establishment kind of thing. And while I said the counterculture, I think, of the cars in Fast and the Furious is a little more fleshed out, and I kind of lean that way, because we do see, like, in L.A. that is nothing. It's like John Wick's L.A., like, where everybody is a street racer kind of thing. Like, whereas everybody in John Wick's world is an assassin, everyone here is a street racer. But to actually, like, explain how the counterculture, like, affects the characters, it's absolutely Point Break, because these dudes are doing all of this simply because they even say it, they don't want to be going to jobs in their metal coffins every morning, you know, something like everything like that.
So between the philosophical aspects of it and just real world, what counterculture do I prefer, racing or surfing? I lean surfing. I can surf, learn to surf in Australia. I like surfing. So
yeah,
that's where I lean on this point.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. It's just, yeah, I mean, of which one I personally prefer, yeah, it's got to be surfing, right? Because, you know, what do you do? Like, there's the two dudes, I think, that are on during the hair sample scene. The two dudes that are just getting high on the beach that Busey cuts the one dude's hair. Like, those dudes' lives just seem like so damn carefree that the only thing they have to worry about is this random dude cutting their hair. There's nothing else they have to worry about.
Again, I look at Lords of Dogtown. I decided I was last night, and I was like, I feel like watching this. It's on Paramount Plus. And it's like, it's one of my favorite docudramas. And then Heath Ledger is like the dude who owns the surf shop and kind of discovers all the guys that make it big. I'm like, this counterculture is like, it's wild to see how it developed since the 70s.
Yeah, and like the LA street racing scene and all that, which of course we can only really talk about in the first movie, maybe the second, maybe Tokyo Drift, because it's a different type of count of street racing culture. But anything past the first three movies, we have completely forgotten our roots, basically. So now then we're in Meathead Mission Impossible. So really, it is this first movie that does kind of like get into everything, because these dudes even talk about their cars. Now, granted, half of the shit, I am by no means a gearhead, I'm not a wrench turner, but I do know, being in the used car business and dealing with cars is my job, I do know that most of the shit these guys say is complete and total nonsense. One of the things that cracks me up the most, and if you go to Donut Media, they have a pretty great video on the dumbest things in the Fast and the Furious franchise. Number one is the alert that Paul Walker gets on his car when it says danger to manifold. There's any number of reasons why that's absolutely stupid, but it's the fact that it's like blinking on a laptop that just makes it even funny.
Yeah.
So if it was coming out of someone's mouth, he'd be like, oh, okay, that's just, you know, that's just bad script writing, but this is a laptop. The laptop gets the dumbest line in the movie.
Which, honestly, if you ever see anyone's cars that actually does racing, they are like as bare bones as possible because they want it to be light.
Absolutely, yeah. You're essentially racing on four wheels, a steering wheel, and a seat with an engine attached. You know, that's really what you want. But at least with those guys, and the funniest thing is that because Dom is, this is probably a good transition into the bigger Zen master, I guess we'll call him, or like the bigger gang leader, the big main gang leader. So Dom versus Bodhi. Dom, on the other hand, it's funny because he has his whole philosophy about, you know, about racing, about the quarter mile and his cars, and he knows his cars, he's a wrench turner and all that. What cracks me up is that he is so believable because he's our main character. Somebody put the thought into him. And it is Vin Diesel actually acting. And that's something I noticed was notably different in F9, that he is not acting. He's just Vin Diesel. But he's actually acting in this movie. To his credit, when Vin Diesel tried when he was younger, he was a good actor. Like, he was very entertaining. He was fun to watch. He was very charismatic. But it's because of that performance that makes the Ja Rule performance, aside from being just Ja Rule, Because Ja Rule tries to pull that shit too. He tries to pull the, like, you're going to learn that. He's like, you're going to learn that there's a difference between driving and racing and all that. It's just like, wait, why is Ja Rule talking right now? Fuck him. You know?
Can we skip Ja Rule and get to Ludacris?
Right, exactly. Why do we have to wait a full movie to get the better actor and rapper? But at least it cracks up because he tries to get in on that as well. And it's like, nah, dude, it's fun. You're Ja Rule. No.
Now you look at like the leaders of the gang, both charismatic in one way or another. In a fight, Toretto's obviously the more intimidating one. But who would actually win, ignoring that Vin Diesel has to win all his fights?
See, that's the thing. I mean, we are shown with Bodhi. Bodhi can fight. Bodhi can fight. He takes out Warchild's crew with Keanu. He puts Johnny Utah. He puts Johnny Utah on the ground when they're fighting and all that. He almost kills Johnny if he wasn't handcuffed. You know, like he finds the handcuff and all that. So he does have to tie that fight. But Bodhi can throw down. He really can. And it's deceptive to look at him. You'd be like, there's no way this dude's just a surfer, but he'll kick your ass if he needs to.
So that like clearly he's in shape, Patrick Swayze. Dude's cut. Dude is
absolutely
cut. But it comes down to one of those things where it's like, it's almost like the classic argument who'd win in a fight, Bruce Lee or Muhammad Ali, where it's like Bodhi seems like he has better technique in a fight. But like if Dom connects, he's just bigger.
He's just got a lot more force behind it. He's got a lot more muscle. Yeah. Like when he damn near beats Johnny Tran's face through the ground, you know, when Johnny Tran says he's a narc and he starts beating the shit out of him, he fights off like a couple big security guards, like with like one hand to get back at Johnny and keep punching him in the face. And it's like, okay, Dom can obviously use his size. And he does, of course, have the aggression where he has beating a man into becoming from going from rapes, car racer to school janitor, you know, so he can do damage if he needs to.
So I do lean that Toretto probably would win in a fight between the two.
Oh, yeah, between the two, I would definitely put it as Toretto winning that game.
The reason that my point absolutely goes to Bodhi is dude could easily be a cult leader.
Absolutely. He pretty much is, you know? But
he could be, like, a huge cult leader, like, thousands of followers.
Yeah, the problem is that would expose too much of his bank-robbing lifestyle, probably. Yeah. Which, all right, so let's do this. Who, in the comparison of these two, who's running the better operation? Let's pull that. Who's running the better operation here?
Bodhi has better control. Like, if we're talking, so like, obviously both slip up in the last heist, but running up to the last heist, Bodhi has like full control under his crew. They're getting out without even like any. So I'm going to lean, and the operation has less variability in my eyes.
90 seconds. It's 90 seconds in and out. They don't touch the vault. That's the thing.
And that cash is king. So getting the cash versus, because like, they have to A, hit a moving vehicle. B, trust that the trucker doesn't have a gun on there. C, move the product after they stole it. So there's a lot more moving Bodhi's. So this is kind of a heist. This is the heist comparison too. So I'm giving the heist point to Bodhi's crew.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely a more well-oiled machine, even though there are less moving parts for Bodhi, because Bodhi's also been at it for how long? How long does Papa say he's been tracking these guys? Is it 3 years? He's been tracking them for like 3 years, and they only hit during the summer. And that's the thing.
There's no wild card like Vince on the crew.
Right. And they've never gotten, and no one, even the feds, have never gotten anything on these guys other than Pappas's like reach that they might be surfers. That's just a thought he has. He has no real evidence of that, other than the fact that they only work during the summer, which in LA, doesn't really make much sense to me as like a big building, like a as like a foundation of your argument for your case, because it's LA. You know, it'll be cold in the winter to surf, but you can still do it. You know, you're still in LA. But it'd be one thing if they were working like the Jersey Shore, you know. Then of course, yes, they are definitely surfers who are only working during the summer. But when it comes to their heists of the banks, they are in and out 90 seconds. They never touch the vault. They are also dressed as ex-presidents. They're masks and they're covered.
Showman points absolutely goes to.
Yeah, it's showman, and it's also smart because you can't obviously identify him. And Roach goes the extra step of being in character as Richard Nixon the whole time, which is even better. But then there's Toretto's crew. Granted, the heist that they pull has more moving parts and is much more difficult and is a much more of a skill job, because to be able to maneuver the cars like they do and then shoot the grappling hook through the window and do everything they need to do to hijack this truck obviously takes incredible levels of skill and experience to be able to pull this off. But it also, both of their plans can go sideways if one random person has a gun. And the funniest thing I saw, and I forget who I saw it from, is there's another story to be told from the trucker's point of view in the Fast and the Furious, where they're like, they've had it with this shit. They're like, they get the uprising going where they're arming themselves. They're getting ready for the hits to happen. Like, they're waiting to take out this crew that keeps robbing them. Like, there's that. But these dudes, like, the one truck driver at the end has the shotgun, and Dom's whole plan goes to shit. Whereas Bodie's plan really just takes one tempted off-duty hero cop, and even he gets killed. Dom doesn't kill the trucker. The trucker gets away at the end. So at least Bodie's willing to go that extra step and kill a cop if necessary. You know, he will get away if he needs to.
Yeah. Also, if they don't go for the vault, they do probably get away in that last heist.
In and out. Like I said, they're in and out. And even that's what Utah yells at him. He's like, you're breaking your own rules, man. And that's what he said. You broke your rules and people got hurt. And that's it. Yeah. He loses grommet, I think, is who he loses in that one.
And then also, so like, suppose the trucker stops the truck. Just stops. Now, the trucker has the high ground with a gun. That is not a good situation for Dom's crew to be in.
Absolutely. And if he hits the brakes at the right time,
he takes out cars.
He's killing Letty underneath it, you know, because we're at least shown that that's what Letty does in that particular heist. Whether or not that's her job the whole time, I don't know. But in fact, I think Dom even says to her, you're going to have to go under this time or something like that. Like, he does say that the plan has to be altered because Jesse was one of the ones that did the driving. Mm-hmm. And since he has now been iced, that obviously can't happen. But yeah, I would give the advantage to, I got to give the advantage to Bodie because he's so much more successful and he's so much more, if it weren't for Gromit or Roach mooning a security camera, they probably wouldn't have anything because there's nothing for Johnny Utah to see later when they moon them. So when someone moons one of them while they're surfing to put the two together, you know, if he'd never done that, he would have never found out.
All right, so right now, 3-1 in favor of Point Break. So we had, what, 2 split decisions between the counterculture and the Red Herring crew, and then point for Point Break on the heist and, like, the mastermind of the bad guys, theoretically. Yeah. Yeah. The technical bad guys.
Yeah, all right. So why don't we do... So why don't we do a beer check-in? See how that's going. Mike, how's your beer?
So Ross Brewing knocked it out of the park with their Hefeweizen. I don't remember if I reviewed this specific beer before. I don't think I did. But I love Heffenweizen's. They have that like yeast that gives it a little bit of a banana flavor to it. So like a nice fruity Heffenweizen ale, love it.
Okay, yeah, and my Corona, it's the only beer in the house. You can have any beer in the house as long as it's Corona. But yeah, it's drinking like a canned Mexican cerveza. It's yeah, maybe it's the lime that does it. I don't know why people. I used to love this shit. I used to love in college. I used to love Coronas, and it's like not no more. not no more. But it's fine. I mean, it's fine, whatever. But all right. So we were on the heist. Why don't we break it down a little smaller into the actual cruise, like the cruise that we're talking about here. So we're talking about young Roach, talking about young Nathaniel and young Gromit as well. And then we're talking about
Are we
Letty.
including Rosie in that crew? I feel like we gotta include Rosie.
Throw Rosie in there. Yeah, we can throw Rosie in there. And then we're talking about, if I remember correctly, we're talking about Letty, Vince, Jesse, and then we're talking about the other two. Do we even get names on the other two?
Yeah, we definitely do get the name for
Owen? Is Owen one of them?
it is
I think Owen's
Leon.
one of them. Leon, that's it. Leon's one of them.
Leon is the one that actually gets like speaking parts. So Vince, Leon, Jesse, Letty.
Yeah. Yeah, Vince, Leon, J yeah, because there's one extra in the ex-presidents. But
I'm just gonna come right out and say it. I lean Fast and the Furious on this one because we actually spend like we spend time with the crew in Point Break, but that's not, we get way more investigation than him spending time with the guys in it. So like outside of Roach, you don't get much from Bodie's crew. Whereas Jesse, you get like his whole death, you get him talking, you get him like saying grace and thanking God for their car parts.
because he touched dinner first.
Yep.
Because he touched dinner
Maybe
first.
we
Like,
should start doing that at Thanksgiving. Whoever goes to take a bite first, we just sit there in awkward silence and it's like, all right, who's gonna take the bite and say grace?
right, exactly. But, I mean, it's like, okay, whatever. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it definitely, and they're, Dom's crew is a little more, is obviously more fleshed out because they're actual characters, except for Leon. His job is police scanner guy. That's about it. But we're also like with the ex-presidents, Roach, we get a little bit of because he gets a little more, he's the one that survives until the end to die, aside from Rosie. But Rosie's just a mechanism, man.
Yeah.
But
That's
then.
now Roach does give me one of my favorite terrible line deliveries in movie history, where you Roach is responsible for it. He doesn't give us it. You toss it and he's like, that's all the blood leaving your body. You're getting cold, you're gonna die soon.
You're cold because all the blood's leaving your body, man. Don't listen to
It's
him. He's just
such bad
scared.
delivery, but like I love it.
Yeah, don't listen to him. He's just scared. It's like, what
Now,
are you
like,
talking about? That's literally what's happening, Brody. Come on.
that's
Like,
like, yeah, I look at Dom's crew and I'm like, you get Vince, the kind of antagonist to Brian. You get Letty, the love interest to Dom, she's winning races, she's the tough girl. You get Jesse, the smart one, and then yeah, there's Leon, who's
there.
present.
Leon goes there. But yeah, and it's, I mean, it's funny because everyone in Bodie's crew is, they're just like supporting characters, and they're there to support Bodie because the real relationship we're looking at here is Bodie versus Utah, Johnny Utah, whereas in, and the rest are just like ancillary. But whereas in Fast and the Furious, they'd take the extra step to try to get everyone, at least aside from Leon, everyone to at least be kind of a character. To this point where we have Vince as the, like, number two, in quotes, well, he's more of like a beta to Dom's alpha, because there's the two things. There's the one, there's him liking Mia, which means he automatically hates Brian because Brian looks at Mia. So there's that stupid conflict. Two
sandwiches stuck here.
Right, exactly. Then there's that. Nobody likes the tuna. But then there's the, what cracks me up the most is when Vince gets kicked out and Brian is there, they're eating dinner or whatever. And it's like the next one, they're eating, they're about to have, they're down the barbecue and all that. And everybody sits down at the table. And then Vince comes walking in, like comes walking to the backyard, and he's got this look on his face, like this like hangdog, I'm sorry face. And Dom gives him a look, and everybody looks at him. He's like, whoa, I got to eat, right? So it's like that, it makes you think that if it isn't for Dominic Toretto, Vince will starve. Vince will somehow die because the alpha of the pack has not provided for him. It's like, well, this is a weird relationship to have.
It's weird that like this relationship doesn't have any effect until movie 5 after this one.
No, I was gonna say, when is it that Vince does eventually actually die? It's the 5th one?
Movie 5.
Okay. Fast 5. Okay.
Which is oddly enough, besides the Fast and the Furious, Fast 5 is my favorite of the movies.
I will always go.
That's
for this
the
one
where
one.
There's it's like the heist in Brazil and they're trying to steal the giant safe.
Right.
There's
right,
a major plot point where, in order to get a guy's fingerprints, they send Gal Gadot in a bikini so that he grabs her ass.
Yeah, it's Gal Gadot's fingerprint pad of an ass is what they had. But yeah, Jesus Christ. What a stupid movie franchise. But yet so on brand. It's so on brand.
It's also the first one with The Rock in it, I think.
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. Like when I was watching Fast 9, when like people are coming back, because little fucking Bow Wow and Lucas Black, they show up again. So I was like, wait, all right. It's like the Drift guys. Oh, I guess we'll bring them back. I guess they need money. Who knows? But with that's the thing. With the actual crews themselves, I appreciate that Dom's and Fast and the Furious and Dom's crew actually get to be like characters. It's like, okay, we have Jesse the ADD gearhead. We have Letty, who is the bitch girlfriend. Then we have Vince, who's the, you know, hot-headed like psycho, basically. And then Leon is there. But then we also have on Point Break side, I think we're given just enough of the crew. We don't need these guys to have, like, inner lives. We don't need these dudes to actually be kind of fleshed out characters. They just kind of got to be slightly different looking surfers, you know? Whereas I think better crew to get stories would be War Child's crew, you know? Because you really want to, they seem like they're four different kind of dudes, you know? And I really want to know why Anthony Kiedis feels the need to, like, beat the shit out of his bed. Yeah, to beat the shit out of his bed while he's listening to music that doesn't even seem to be, like, hard enough to warrant how he's dancing.
Could you imagine if they were just playing... So Under the Bridge would have come out by then. So if they were just playing Under the Bridge.
Yeah, they're just playing... It's just a Chili Pepper song he's listening to. But it is something, like, real slow and stupid. But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, as far as the actual like crews go, I would give it to Fast and the Furious simply because, and again, it has
outside
something
of
to
the biggest surf country conversation. You don't get much from that crew. Like, no way, Belly, he just big waves in Waimea.
Waimea, bro. But and
that,
then of course,
did I mention on the podcast that we went when I was in Hawaii? We went to Waimea, but it was the wrong Waimea.
Yeah. Because it's
We didn't go to we went to Kauai's Waimea, not what's that that what's the big not so it's not the big island. It's not Maui, it's not Kauai, it's the other island.
Wahoo.
Oahu. Oahu has Waimea he's talking about. We went to the Waimea on Kauai.
Yeah, that must be on the North Shore then. I don't remember, because I remember we were out there, and the North Shore is where all the surfing was.
Yeah.
But and then there's the fact that Bell's Beach is actually in Washington, I believe, is where they filmed that. And that's where they don't actually go to Australia.
Hey, I've been to Bell's Beach, Australia.
Right, but the movie hasn't. So
that's true.
The movie has been to Washington. But with Fast and the Furious crew, we do get the golden line of the Buster brought me back. We at least get that. So why'd you bring the Buster to us? You know, we at least get that line. I was like, all right, all right. And then of course that leads to the legendary, you can have any brew in the house as long as it's a Corona, you know. It's,
all right, so yeah, so Fast and this is the first full point for Fast and the Furious. So it's 3-2 right now, 3-2. Let's absolutely go love interest next.
All right, so we're talking Jordana Brewster versus Lori Petty in 1991. I don't know.
Looks wise, I lean Jordana Brewster.
I don't know, man. Tyler's got that look of like that, like slightly crazy look to her that, you know, she might kill you, or it might be the greatest you've ever been with, you know? It's, or you could die being with the greatest you've ever been with, you know? It's right. The danger of it. Jordana Brewster is just, she just has family issues.
But whereas, she's so, so damn hot.
She is definitely a very attractive young woman in 2001. She is very attractive, which, again, in Fast 9, when she comes back, you can definitely see the years have passed on Jordana Brewster's face. Like the Texas Chainsaw reboot that she was in is definitely there on her face. Like, I have had to do some things in my career to keep relevant.
But now, if I'm going outside of looks, it's Tyler, hands down.
Absolutely, because Tyler
is a character.
She's a character. She is. She is an actual character. Yeah.
You get the. Do you even have a soul?
Right, exactly. And she's a hell, she's either the worst shot ever or she's the best shot ever, because she shoots right next to Utah's head to wake him up. So and given what we see of Tyler, I'm willing to bet she's very adept with a gun, you know.
Yeah.
But then we can also, with the love interest, we can also compare the eateries that they run. There is Jordette Mia runs that shitty ass borderline gas station restaurant. And then Tyler has Neptune's Net that she works at, which, in fully comparing these two movies, features in Fast and the Furious as well, because that's where Dom and Brian go and talk about,
yeah,
and over shrimp, talk about getting involved with the crew, you know? So it's the same restaurant. So theoretically, Tyler could, if she hadn't gone away, presumably with Johnny Utah, she could still be working at this restaurant. But I think Tyler's obvious. For me, it's Tyler. I think it's the best one, better one, because she has more of an actual arc in an actual like story arc. She goes from hating Johnny Utah to being begrudgingly helping him, to liking him, to falling in love with him, to hating him, to then falling in love with him again, you know, after he saves her life. But whereas Mia, on the other hand, is just Dom's sister who wants to get laid by the main character. It's really all she is.
Not really. Like, she does, like, the fight breaking up and stuff. And, like, I think she ends up going out with Brian because she's so tired of Vince's shit. And she
hates
knows
Vince. He hates Vince. That's why, like, she pulls
the
that
scene
restaurant.
She's like, what's that Brazilian restaurant you've been asking to take me to? Like, cha-cha-cha?
Cha-cha-cha. Let's take a second and say cha-cha-cha is the name of a Cuban restaurant in L.A. Cha-cha-cha. Okay.
You can take me there. So, yeah, Tyler's an actual character. She is a well-written character in the movie that has an arc.
Yeah, and arguably, I mean, I don't know how arguably it is because she is Lori Petty is just a better actress than Jordana Brewster, and it's really not even close. But when it
There
comes
also been the
to
funny scene of her actually teaching Utah how to surf.
right, yeah, it's like the scene with Paul Rudd and forgetting Sarah Marshall. Now pop up. Now pop. No, do less. Well, you gotta do more than that. Do more. Fuck it. We'll figure it out when we get out there. But it's yeah. I lean towards the actual character of Lori because of Lori Petty and Tyler because they didn't. Jordana Brewster was not the focus of the Fast and the Furious's writing team. They were not looking.
So that's the thing. Like, to flesh out the crew, you gotta take away some things. Like, you don't get the law enforcement aspect that you get in Point Break, and you don't get the love interest aspect that you get in Point Break.
Yeah, they're really like, they're really like afterthoughts in Fast and Furious because the what we're really focusing on here is the cat and mouse between Brian and the street culture. We're talking about the street racing culture, all that kind of stuff. We're not the romantic lead, the romantic storyline in Fast and Furious is there because it's part of the formula. Like it has to be there. We have to have some sort of damsel in distress or whatever. But on a side note of the love interest, who is better at receiving, or which character, which of our main characters is better at being an undercover cop? Is it Johnny Utah, who even after being found out as an FBI agent, still pretty much tries to play it like I'm an under, like he doesn't full out admit it. He's still on the defensive. Whereas Brian, unprovoked, just comes out and was like, look, I'm an undercover cop. I'm tracking your brother, and if he does what he's about to do, it's gonna be bad. So I need to be a cop forever. And like, I just need to completely blow my cover for no real reason. Whereas Johnny Utah is like, look, I'm a fed. There's a little more weight to my job. I think I need to play it cool a little more, even though I am
Wait,
naked at the
so
moment.
I Johnny Utah going back there and continuing to act undercover. I don't know if that's actually like a point in his favor for him being a good cop. Seems like that's a dumb fucking idea.
No, I think it's on the opposite. I think it's the greatest thing for him to do because it shows how dedicated to being a cop he is. It's
All right,
like nothing happened.
so with let me think about the points real quick for the movie. So it counterculture split, the Red Herring crew was split, so 1 point for each. Bad guy or leader of the crew goes to Point Break. The crew itself goes to Fast and the Furious. The heist goes to Point Break. The love interest goes to Point Break. So 4-2 right now. But all that's left is the main character.
We have our main character of Johnny Utah, FBI agent, versus Brian O'Connor, detective, potential LAPD detective.
Detective Kennedy.
Potential detective. Just LAPD is what he is.
All right, so I'm going to come out and I think Brian is far and away the better cop.
Wow, that's insane to me.
All right,
Insane to me.
let's run through the numbers. A, Johnny Utah uses his real fucking name.
Which, since he gets away with it for so long, because A, already knows his entire backstory, his legit backstory. And yet is still not found out to be an FBI agent.
B, he's doing a sting operation with people that very could recognize. Like, if they're doing their job, these people are going to recognize Johnny. So you think riot gear, maybe? I don't know. Maybe something like Brian uses when they actually raid what's his name's house.
Oh, yeah. When they go after Johnny Tran and he's there. But the problem is, the problem with Brian is during that is that Paul Walker has quite possibly the most distinct blue eyes anyone has ever had in the history of eyes. Because you look at this man, the first thing you notice is that he has these like ice blue pools in his eyes you can fall into. Whereas you see that in under like riot gear, Johnny Tran even looks at him and goes, "Wait, I know those fucking blue eyes. I know who that is." Whereas Keanu was just everybody, man.
But he that's not everybody. Him being, that's not him being a bad cop. That's him just having a feature that's too distinguishable to hide.
Well, he should, if he was a good cop, he would know his own flaws and to know that he needs the dark visor.
All right, now. Like Brian is actually investigating. Like he's actually going in their garages. Johnny immediately like these guys can't fucking be the robbers.
Well, in all fairness to Utah, Brian is at the same time, he's kind of in the same boat. Because he's very willing to throw it on Johnny Tran or even Hector. Because he thinks it's Hector at one point, too. So we do get two misdirects here.
But he investigates them.
But he's also very openly not wanting to say that it's Dom. You know, even though all evidence, even Ted
but
Levine screams it at
him. But he does sneak into Dom's garage to investigate.
Well, yeah.
So he's open to the possibility of it being Dom. And if he found hard evidence that it was Dom... Then
well, yeah, at that point, I think he would, but Keanu is absolutely operating under the belief that, and it's given the evidence that he has, it makes sense to go after War Child's crew because both of them surf the same break. They both surf the same beach. So if anything, he just picks the wrong crew to go after because given the evidence he knows about War Child and their crew, these dudes are criminals.
He also doesn't really investigate that much.
I mean, does he need to, though? Like, that's the question. Does he really need
to? Yeah, kind of, because if he did, he would have realized the DEA was
well, yeah, obviously. Well, actually, no, because I've always believed that you can't put that on Utah because the FBI, HARP, could have known. He could have known or been able to reach out and find out that Sizemore is deep cover. Like he, and for the DEA, there's absolutely some interdepartmental communication that needs to take place in this situation so the false raid doesn't happen, you know? I can't really put that on Utah because he's going off bad info.
But he also, like, we see Brian sneaking around with a flashlight, like, investigating. We don't get that with Johnny. So if we're going actual character, Johnny is the clear winner. If we're going cop, then Brian is the winner to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, I don't know, it's funny because everything that Brian does, especially when it comes to keeping his cover, is almost immediately undone by Brian himself. No, he's the one that gives it all up. Whereas, unfortunately for Johnny as
but
well,
he doesn't need to be in cover anymore because he found them.
Well, he also straight up tells me who the fuck he is. So yeah. He should not have done that.
No, but he should have done that. But also the investigation, for all intents and purposes, is he found who he was looking for.
Right. And I mean, well, so did Utah by default because it wasn't the other crew.
Utah also does nothing to protect his cover. He does not take a single step to protect his cover.
Neither does Brian. The only thing that Brian does, and it's not even his job, it's when Levine and the other guy arrest him on the street. That's the only cover that they take to protect, like the protection they take for his cover. And even then, it cracks me up because Levine does say, well, you never know who's watching. Well, in that case, you should not have taken him directly to where your safe house is, because if someone was truly following Brian, they would have followed where he went with the cops. So you inadvertently led them right to your safe house. But that's not on Brian. That's obviously on Ted Levine. But the thing is, I think with Johnny Utah, granted, he's not a great federal agent. He's not. And he does it, but it's also part of his character and the story to lose his allegiances. He has to choose who he wants to support and who he really is. Is it his friendship with Bodie, or is it his loyalty to being an FBI agent? Which clearly, because of knowing Bodie and all that, he doesn't want to be an FBI agent anymore, because as far as we know, he's only ever worked this one case. And yeah, at the end of it, he throws his badge in the ocean. So he really has only worked this one case. Whereas Brian, at least, I think probably has gotten a couple other cases to do, or will get, you know, a couple other cases to do. But granted, at the end of Fast and the Furious, it's a similar situation. And the only reason we know that he has gone on to a life of crime
is the sequel. In the first sequel, he's undercover again.
Right. So he's at least still a cop, but he eventually does transition into being, you know, other than the actor himself being dead. The character of Brian is, for all intents and purposes, in F9 at least, is a family man and a stay-at-home dad, for as far as we know. But Johnny Utah, we at least get a complete story, because in 1991, no one was thinking of sequels for every movie and all that. So the natural end to his character is to have his man get away and die while also quitting because he's disillusioned with the force, whatever it is. But at least to Brian's credit, it's on him to give up his cover. Whereas Johnny Utah basically just has his badge fall out of his pants after fucking Tyler. So she finds his badge and gun. And that is very much a number one no-no when you're undercover. Don't have your badge in your back pocket.
Now, overall, I do give the point to Utah as the main character that I like better. But as cop, I give it to Brian.
Yeah, yeah. Actually being better at the job, I would concede that it is Brian. But being a character that I'd want to watch, absolutely Johnny Utah. Because even in those subsequent sequels, Paul Walker is just the blonde guy in the background. The dude is wallpaper. I'm sorry. I know he was a handsome, pretty boy, but he was not a good actor. He is by no means a good actor. Now, Keanu, people say, is not a good actor, but Keanu has a certain Keanu Reeves charm. Paul Walker is just a pretty face. That's all he is. That's all he was. But I don't know. I would absolutely rather watch 10 movies of Johnny Utah becoming Ethan Hunt, basically, than Paul Walker getting through 7 and unfortunately dying. But I don't know. I would much rather see the saga of Johnny Utah and Dom Toretto Johnny Utah and Bodie versus Dom Toretto and Paul Walker and Brian Spillner, aka Brian O'Connor.
All right. So, final tally is a 5-2 point break.
Yeah, I mean, unless we give a 4-point category, there's no way that that Fast and the Furious can come back. But then there's, even if we do add one more, which is just how the heist goes wrong, basically, like, because there is that final element that we haven't talked about, which is how that final heist does go wrong. And every step, just in general, of these two movies, every step of these two movies is pretty much beat for beat the same. Fast and the Furious is beat for beat the same as Point Break. It has all the major revelations at the same time, all the major events. The only thing we don't get in Fast and the Furious is a night football game on the beach, but you can count the numerous street races as being that same thing, not even that equivalent. But then at the end, we have our heist go wildly wrong. And it's because our main villain, or quote-unquote our main villain, has taken it upon himself to try to go big And he shouldn't have. He breaks his own rules and things go sideways.
So that's so yeah, Bodhi breaks his own rules. And then the heist for the truck, it's a mix of we don't have Jesse and the trucker ends up having a gun.
Yeah, he ends up having endless ammunition and a shotgun with which to do it.
So Bodhi hitting confident with, you know, Bodhi bringing on Johnny and then going for the safe. And then Brian ignoring the fact that they're missing one of their key players.
Yeah, it's... And then, of course, we could also tack on to that. Who had the better getaway? Quote-unquote getaway. Is it Bodhi dying in the 50-year storm? Or is it Vin? Or is it Dom Toretto? Literally being handed the keys out of the movie. Literally being handed the keys to drive out of the movie. And I got to give it to Bodhi in this, because Bodhi died the way they set up he would die. So, like, it's all set up in the beginning. The whole movie, and by no means is Point Break the godfather when it comes to writing, but everything is set up, everything is paid off, and everything is done. And the only difference is it's done in a 90s action movie way. But it's still perfectly set up and knocked down. Whereas in the Fast and the Furious, we're pretty much like, we got sequels coming. So we're at least doing a second one. We got to keep everybody alive, you know?
So I'm torn on this because story-wise, Bodhi's ending is clearly better. But if I were to put myself in their shoes, give me Dom's ending, motherfucker.
Once you live, and you get a pretty sweet super out of the deal, you know? But I don't know. I have to lean, obviously, I lean towards Bodhi because it's a conclusion to a story. And it's an appropriate conclusion for both of them. Because then we even get Johnny quitting the force. You know, he's quitting the agency and all that. But, and then, of course, we do get the one random Australian's line of, nobody going out there, mate. It's death on a stick out there. It's like... Love it, dude. It's clearly not an actor. They clearly just wanted him to say something, and that's what they picked for him to say. But then there's the, and it's one of those situations where you can't suspend disbelief if you know the truth. When Dom and Brian do their final quarter mile race, and Dom does the burnout wheelie, something that is not physically possible with the laws of physics to do on that particular car because it's rear wheel drive. You just simply wouldn't be able to do it, my friend. You could do the burnout, but you couldn't do the wheelie, and vice versa. You could do the wheelie, but you can't do the burnout. There's a lot of things that go wrong there. So when you see that, I'm like, all right, I am now back in the wonderful world of movies, you know? But I do, there is a certain sense, it's a little more tense when they jump the train, when they jump in front of the train, because it is a tense scene. Like, you're like, holy shit, they might not have made it right there.
And
like,
then Dom getting hit by the car.
Getting plowed by that car, too. It's even funnier. But of course, since it is Vin Diesel and he can't die or even lose a fight to a car, he has
he's actually pretty damaged there. Like, he has a broke arm, clearly, and
which will play no role in anything else going forward. He'll never have a bad shoulder after that, but it is. I would say that Bodhi's ending is better, but it is a little more tense of an ending in The Fast and the Furious because there's in Point Break, there's no real question that Johnny Utah is not going to get his man, but there is a question of whether or not Bodhi's going to go to jail. And While Dom Toretto does survive, it is Patrick Swayze who has the better final line, which is, you know, I can't handle a cage, man. There's cliffs on both sides. I'm not going to paddle to New Zealand. You know, it's just a better line to go out on. And I would much rather have that.
Bodhi definitely has, like, the better ending because it's actually an ending.
It is actually an ending. And, But, of course, Point Break was a encased in amber, once in a lifetime, because I'm not even counting that stupid fucking remake, once in a lifetime amazing movie. And of course Fast and the Furious will never end. It'll outlive us all, you know. It will be the heat death of the universe before this movie's end. But so, Mike, I think our final tally gives it to the OG, right? Gives it to to our man.
Point Break ran away. But Fast and the Furious was keeping it close at first, but then Point Break ran away with it. It was kind of like the Houston-Baltimore game. First half, it was pretty close.
Yeah. I mean, dude, still, though. Eagles are out of it, but I'm a Lions fan right now, man. Go Lions. Fucking Detroit, I feel like
everyone team isn't in it is a Lions fan.
Yeah, go Lions. And I don't know. I think last time I checked, because we record this on Sunday night, so last time I checked, I think the Chiefs were still winning. Last time I checked.
Yeah.
But and they'll probably win.
Yeah, some people Josh Allen might support Buffalo because, like, you gotta feel bad for a team that went to 4 straight Super Bowls and didn't win one.
Yeah, but Josh Allen is the new Jim Kelly, so. Yep. He's going to be the one to never actually make it to the Super Bowl and lose every time.
Make him the new Phillip Rivers instead?
I guess, yeah. But so, yeah. So
as a Chargers fan, I mean, like, no disrespect to Phillip Rivers, but.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? But, all right. So, yeah, Point Break, obviously the best. But it is kind of insane to me that the Fast and the Furious franchise was built out of Point Break with cars. That's how we start. And then we get to Meathead Mission Impossible. They bite off of two different mega franchises, like another mega franchise, to get the rest of their stories going. And it's just, oh man. I fell asleep halfway through F9 last night, but I'll probably finish it. And I guarantee at the end of that, I'm still going to be like, you know what? Not better. Not better than Mission Impossible.
I haven't seen 8, 9, or 10.
8 is terrible. It is bad. 9 had the first half of 9 is watchable, please. And from what I understand about Fast X, Jason Momoa might be the greatest character the franchise has ever seen, which makes sense because the dude rules. But we're not talking about the Fast and the Furious franchise, Mike. We are talking about other movies that are basically the same. So before we talk about next week's movies, where can people find us on the internet?
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, and just about anywhere else you get your podcast from, thanks to Spotify Podcasts. You also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Go like and subscribe, please.
Please.
Whatever. Looks like Kansas City is winning. We're marking, we're recording as the game's ending, so Kansas City won.
Nice. All right. So that means, well, we all know what that means. That means we have to start hunting men for sport, which means we are going back to one of our favorite movies that we've done for in a while, which is Surviving the Game with man Ice-T. And then we're also going to go back to our buddy Jean-Claude Van Damme, because we're also going to do Hard Target. And I haven't seen Hard Target in quite some time, but
I've never seen it.
It's amazing, but I don't believe it's a straight up put him in the woods and hunt him situation like Surviving the Game. But it is Jean-Claude, it is Ice-T. We're not gonna have a bad time doing it. So until next week when we discuss our Manhunter movies, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
And we'll see you guys next time. So long.